From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There's three people that have their name in the hat right now, and it's Dwight Kay, Representative Raymond Poe, and Representative Jim Durkin. Unfortunately, this thing is kind of becoming more upstate and downstate, the battle, as opposed to who's the most capable leader.
After this thing's over, I hope we don't hear about upstate, downstate, and all that. I hope we talk about the Republicans in Illinois. I think that's what we got to work on first, is getting so that the House isn't veto-proof. And that would be our first goal. And then after that, it'd be building on those numbers and hope we can get to a point where we can take the House.
Well, that was Representative Raymond Poe of Springfield. We also heard Representative Rich Brower of Petersburg. They are both Republicans and both talking about the possible race for the leadership post in the House GOP, as the House Republican leader Tom Cross has announced he is going to be stepping aside from that job. He's expected to run for Illinois Treasurer and could make an announcement on that in a couple of weeks. It is a rare change among legislative leadership at the Capitol, and what will be the impact? We will talk about that and more on this week's State Week in Review. I'm Sean Crawford, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Finicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Brian Mackey, who is IPR State House Reporter. Well, Amanda, surprised at this move by Tom Cross, this decision to sort of step down, I guess, from House GOP leadership and run for another office?
Well, you know, he had been talking about perhaps running for attorney general, or at least that was the scuttlebutt. Of course, that dynamic changed for not just Cross, but for other individuals, including Senator Kwame Raoul, who's now potentially looking at making a run for governor, when Attorney General Lisa Madigan said that she was going to run for another term. It's basically seen that she will coast to remaining on as Illinois' attorney general. So, yes, somewhat of a surprise, although I think the House Republican caucus had gotten in a bit of a tizzy when the news came out that Cross was even looking at that option, and you heard talk of, you know, potential successors. And it has really been a tough for him to hold the ranks of House Republicans together, whereas we heard from Representative Raymond Poe in that opening there, I hope when this is over we're going to hear less about upstate and downstate. I don't think that's going to happen. We hear a lot of that, and that's particularly the case within Republicans. You've seen that caucus change very much from a moderate one to a lot more social conservatives as you have more candidates elected from downstate. You're seeing a lot of actual long-serving members of the Illinois House and the Republican side of the aisle are not going to be coming back next year. You know, you look at, for example, Representative Sasha says that he's not coming back. He's retiring. You have Mike Boss down from Southern Illinois, who's looking at a run for Congress. There, it is seen that Darlene Sanger, so one of Cross's big allies from Naperville, is also making a bid for Congress. You are seeing many of the ladies who are a member, who are House Republicans, being looked at as possibilities for running mates for the men that are running for governor on the Republican side of the aisle that want to try and balance out the ticket. So it's really a change in caucus, and I think Cross just, you know, it seems ready to move on to, I guess it's all speculative whether it's bigger and better, but that's his hope.
But let me ask, why would anybody want to leave a leadership position? Because, I mean, you have people that work underneath you. You get a lot of attention. Even when you're in the minority, and he's been in the minority the entire time. But still, I mean, that's a position that comes with some authority there. Why would somebody want to give that up?
Well, there are a number of reasons. I mean, one, you pointed out, he has been in the minority. The House Republicans have been in the minority since January of 1997. And for another, more than a decade before that, multiple decades before that. I'm not sure the last time, Mike Madigan has been speaker for all that time. And so you're always kind of second fiddle. And it's just gotten worse in recent years. In the last election cycle, under a new map of legislative districts, the Republicans are now in super minority status. So they don't even have used to be that if there was going to be a veto override, or if the legislature didn't get a budget passed by the May 31st deadline, then the Republicans would get a seat at the table and they would be able to take part in budget negotiations or have some say. And now the group of Republicans in the House is so small that if the Democrats all can stick together, they don't even get that say. There are other reasons. I mean, Cross is an attorney, so I don't know that this is playing into his calculation, but, there are other jobs that make more money. You do get an extra stipend as a state lawmaker who is the minority leader, as well as for being a committee chairperson and things like that. But it's not the highest paying job in government.
Well, I think part of it, too, is that someone who is politically ambitious would see moving from representing a single district to being elected statewide in a position, say, as treasurer or as attorney general, as a move up. And by and large, most of these folks in public life are ambitious. They want to start at the bottom and work their way up to the top. So it's not at all surprising. As a matter of fact, the one announced Democratic candidate for treasurer is State Senator Michael Frerichs from Champaign. And there will be other lawmakers who attempt to go for statewide offices as well. As you mentioned, Amanda, some of the women legislators are being looked at as potential running mates because under the new rules that were enacted, I guess, last year, gubernatorial candidates, when they file their petitions, also have to have the name of a running mate that will form their team for the primary, and then if they win in the primary, for the general election.
You're right, Charlie. That's a great point. And you think about all the statewide office holders in Illinois, I would say the majority of them in recent years have had positions in the state legislature before. Dan Rutherford was a state senator. Lisa Madigan was a state senator. George Ryan, who eventually became governor after holding several statewide offices, had been a member of the House of Representatives and the Speaker of the House.
Well, and Comptroller Judy Bartzepinka was in the House and the Senate.
But other than George Ryan, I mean, most of the people you're talking about, they did represent just one district. They weren't the leader of an entire caucus. So, I mean, it's pretty rare, though, to see somebody that has made it to that point decide to move over and run for something else.
I think you're right, because in a lot of ways, the minority leader even has more power and more control than, say, a treasurer in a lot of ways. I think it's interesting because when you speak with some people who really aren't into government, I think a lot of people are aware about a treasurer and comptroller's role, but a lot of people aren't. And, you would talk to, I remember just meeting somebody when Alexei Janulius was treasurer and was trying to run for U.S. Senate, and they were like, he was treasurer when the state was going bankrupt, and it's his fault. And people think of, the word treasurer, I think, in a totally different way. As minority leader, you do, even with a minority caucus, are seen as taking votes on a lot of the controversial positions. So I do think, Sean, that it is something that, who knows, maybe he will be successful and grow to appreciate. It could be something that he could regret. I mean, I think you see a lot of people that are in this capital culture and don't want to leave it, and it can become a very addictive thing for people. And you notice that in either, as we've talked about, the state legislators that try and move up to higher office, or even, they're plenty of reasons for this, but the people that stick around and lobby after being in the Capitol, and it does become kind of a different sort of world. And Cross is taking a chance at leaving a very high position in it.
Well, we talked before about being a leader, whether you're the Speaker of the House or whether you're a minority leader. It can be a bit like herding cats, I guess, at times. You have a situation, and Brian, I'll have you talk a little bit about the upstate-downstate discussion that was at the top of the show. But also, you have the hardcore conservatives, you have the moderates within your own caucus, and certainly the Republican Party in Illinois has seen a great divide over the past many years now. That has to probably weigh on you a little bit as well when you're a leader, that maybe after a while you're like, I don't know that I want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, you have this. I think this goes back partly to the legislative maps and the new district boundaries that were drawn a few years ago. You have the Democrats have been so successful in the suburban areas that a lot of Republicans now are a little more. The Republicans are a little more concentrated downstate, and therefore perhaps a little more conservative. Because the idea, you want to draw the districts if you are the party in power, just enough to get your people elected and try and kind of group the other people into as few a districts as possible. So you end up getting districts that tend to be more conservative, perhaps. And so you have this, and what we heard the audio at the top of the show, this upstate-downstate divide. A lot of your maybe upstate suburban Republicans are a little more business-oriented and, you know, really take this pension reform issue very seriously. Certainly, Tom Cross has made it something he's talked about for years now, is trying to do something to solve Illinois' $100 billion unfunded pension liability problem. But you have downstate lawmakers who have prisons and universities, and you know, Representative Poe here in Springfield has a lot of state workers in his district, and he does not like a lot of the plans that have come out, which are you know, targeting state workers and retirees, saying they have to give up some of their benefits in order to help solve this problem. And I mean, that's just one of the issues that's kind of led to this divide.
So the union, well, should, let me ask you guys, should be happy if Raymond Poe were to get that position, I guess.
Well, they'd probably be happier than if it were someone who was hardcore the other way. But Amanda and Brian, is my recollection accurate that when Speaker Madigan's plan, which really cuts drastically benefits for state employees, not just state employees, but for all public workers, when that bill passed the House by a narrow margin, if I'm not mistaken, didn't most House Republicans, including Representative Poe, vote against it?
Yeah, and Representative Poe will say that he has long been opposed to a lot of the pension plans that are out there because he doesn't feel it's fair to workers who, you know, he will, I think he will say, I don't have quotes in front of me, but the gist of what he would say is that they've done their fair share. They've had, you know, 9%, whatever it is, taken out of every paycheck, and it's been the state's problem. And so this, you know, the state needs to come up with a way to try and fix this without hurting the workers so much.
Whereas
would be his contention, I think.
Republican lawmakers from the suburbs, I would say from the city, except there's only one, are more inclined to represent or reflect the views of the business community and the corporate leaders in Chicago who say what we have to do is just gut these benefits because we don't want to have to pay for them.
Right. I mean, because of the constitutional protection of pensions, and I don't know how far off we want to get on this, there are a very limited number of things you can do to try and make up a $100 billion deficit. And if you look at it very broadly, one of the ways is cutting benefits. And we've certainly seen that in the private sector. Corporations declare bankruptcy and gut the employee pensions, or they negotiate very harsh contracts with their workers and gut the pensions. That's one way to go about it. The other way in government would be to raise taxes. And we certainly know that a lot of people in this state, particularly in the business community and the Republican Party, would be opposed to continuing the tax increase we've had or even raising more tax revenue in some other way.
Well, and so whoever does become leader, I think, is going to have, we've been talking a lot about the policy issues, which of course are important, and that's a worthy discussion, but it's also trying to decrease that super minority that the House Republican caucus and also the Republicans over in the Senate have. And that is a question as the representatives are making their decision about who they want to be their next leader. You also have to, you know, look at fundraising. And particularly, for example, when you look at pensions, that is a question. Will unions all of a sudden, let's pretend that it is Poe, will unions come around? Because he's, yes, very stridently been an ally in many of their causes, particularly. Of course, you look at, he represents Springfield, where there are state workers, and that is, you know, the big job. Or in what will the corporate community do that has thus far, yes, been very tightly allied with Cross?
I guess the last downstate leader in the legislature was Frank Watson, if I can think back that far. But I believe he was the last one because he was from Greenville, sort of in the Metro East area. We'll leave this topic
right now. Right, we only have one that is one state leader, really, and that is Treasurer Dan Rutherford, who isn't from the Chicago area.
Although I would put in that our lieutenant governor is not from Chicago. She's from Carbondale.
That is true.
If you want to say the lieutenant governor's a leadership job, we'll go from there. But and she is running for another position as well. And Amanda, we'll leave this topic in just a moment. But what's the timeline going forward for filling this House Republican leadership position?
Well, so just this week, Cross, again, he has not actually officially announced his treasurer, although that is – definitely what we, from all appearances at least, what is going to be the case. But he told the members of his caucus first on a conference call. And so within coming weeks, there will potentially be a meeting of the House Republican caucus. The timeline is really unclear. And I think it in part depends on when there does seem to be a consensus about who could next be that leader. But Cross saying that he plans to step down sometime in the fall.
So we should somebody before the veto session, though.
Yeah, I'd read in October, early October, okay. in one news report I saw.
All right. Well, this is State Week in Review, and just ahead, we'll talk about some new laws that affect drivers.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
And we're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey. And nobody more happy than Charlie Wheeler because he can get out to our studio to do this show faster when they raised that speed limit to 70 miles per hour. That was one of the bills the governor signed. But he did it, and whoever wants to weigh in on this, he did that over the objections, really, of the Department of Transportation Secretary and the state police, who claimed that, you know, people going faster are going to lead to more accidents, maybe more fatalities.
And I won't say he did it in the dark of night, but he certainly did not hold an event. He did not have a big signing ceremony. And in fact,
he did it on the last day possible.
Yeah. And I found out about it even just because a press release got inadvertently posted online before he was even really ready to send it out. And he made a big point of pointing out that this was raising the speed limit in rural areas. And there's actually been some question about that. So what the law says is 70 mile an hour. It can be the maximum speed limit or will be the maximum speed limit on interstate highways. And it gives Cook County and a number of the collar counties and some of the even, I guess, the suburbs have grown so much around Chicago that what we call collar counties might have grown as well. But so basically in the Chicago area, counties can choose to opt out of this 70 mile an hour speed limit, supposedly under this legislation. But the intention, Jim Oberweis, the state senator who sponsored this, said it was his intention that really you'd have 70 miles an hour, the maximum speed limit outside the big cities throughout the state of Illinois.
We say rural
interstates.
Yeah, rural interstates. Let's say the interstate that goes through Springfield, where I-55, for example, goes around Springfield. When you get around Springfield, would it go up as well?
No, so my understanding of this is basically if you were driving from Chicago to St. Louis down Interstate 55, say, probably be 55 in Chicago, and it stays 55 almost through Joliet. And once you get outside of Joliet, you go past the arsenal there, it jumps up to 65. And then I think you'd pretty much be, under the new law, it would jump up to 70, and you would stay there perhaps until the Metro East area just outside St. Louis.
I'm guessing
this
that Springfield, that wouldn't be true for Springfield, though, because the way the law is written, it talks about non-urban, outside of urban areas, outside of metropolitan areas. There's some confusion about it, and as I read it, I would say that the speed limit would still be subject to a lower limit going through the city of Springfield.
It's kind of like high-speed rail to some extent. You go up in certain areas and around towns, you may go down a bit.
I wonder, but I mean, right now it's still 65 through Springfield, isn't it? I don't think it drops down to 70, or I shouldn't say, I don't think it drops down to 55 in Springfield like it does in the Chicago area. But I drive
and
through
that's
town, not on the interstates as often, so.
Yeah. I will say that this is something that I think it is kind of interesting to dissect, and we haven't seen the governor to ask him about his position or where he took this stance, but it's something that proved to be popular when polled, I believe, that people were like, yeah, I want to be able to drive faster. And yet it does get into a conundrum. Quinn is not alone at all in politicians when he says, this is my top priority. This is my top priority. I know we were just talking the other day about how, you know, he'll say sometimes that protecting the public safety of the people is his top priority, but also creating a JOBS and jobs and economic in Illinois' economy is the number one priority. Well, and of course, pensions, number one priority. He can't sleep. He was put on this earth to solve that.
Well, Amanda, who is pushing this idea, though? I mean, I didn't hear bunch of motorists driving up to the Capitol asking for this.
And that's where it can be, I think, just interesting when you come out and, you know, you make those statements, and yet you have a Department of Transportation and state police saying that they think this will do the opposite of protecting people's health and public safety, because they believe that it will lead to more accidents, or at least more fatal accidents, when people are driving faster. That said, it was put forth by a senator, Republican Jim Oberweis, and he said that, you know, people go that fast anyway, so let's enforce the law instead of having a law in the books of 65 and letting people flout it. So I do know, I will speak from personal experience, that I was in Iowa and got a ticket just after they had changed their speed limit to 70 from 65, and I got a ticket for going, I believe it was 1 mile over. So going 71 got me, and that is something to keep in mind, drivers, once this goes into effect in January, that police are supposed to ostensibly be, you know, tighter enforcement of the speed limit once it is higher, and also it does scale back, scales back the mileage that you can go over before higher penalties kick in for excessive speeding.
Yeah, I was sort of saying, I would let my office holder know if I got a ticket for going 1 mile over the speed limit. I would be contacting somebody about that. But.
Well, it's interesting because the state police keep statistics on the tickets that are given out. And when I was a reporter, we would periodically look at those things because it was fascinating to see that every year there would be maybe a dozen tickets given out for somebody going 1 mile over the speed limit. And so you think to yourself, what were the circumstances involved here? Because generally the rule of thumb is they'll give you 5 miles, sometimes 7 miles before they
stop. I'm
going to
say it was my Illinois plate in Iowa.
And who knows? Maybe, I mean, police use excuses to stop someone they think looks suspicious because they maybe want to try and do a drug search or something like that. And then they end up, well, I've got this person stopped. Maybe they mouthed off, and then they end up getting the ticket for going 1 mile an hour over.
Yeah, that's what we would assume.
Well,
I just wanted to add, Illinois is not breaking new ground here. During the House debate, they said there are 34 states that have 70 mile an hour or greater. 15 states even have 75 mile an hour speed limits. And if you're in Utah and Texas, apparently it's 80 miles an hour.
And I'm not too old to remember when there was a big push to lower the speed limit to 55 miles per hour across the country. Charlie, why is it up to 70 now? Are the cars just that much safer? People drive that much better?
Well, the argument for reducing it to 55 was as a way to save gas. It was back in the 70s when we were concerned about where we were going to get our oil. And as that concern kind of eased off, people naturally want to go faster. And so they would argue for the higher speed limits. And the rationale was always, well, let's make it 65 because people are going 65 anyway. And now it's, well, let's make it 70 because people are going 70 anyway. And the cars are better designed. They're safer. The roads are designed better. But as I think it was, I don't remember if it was the state police or IDOT pointed out, the laws of physics don't change. And when you add that extra speed, that causes the impact, that collision to be greater, the force applied there. And the result is going to be that we're going to have more people killed on the highways. And I don't think anybody disputes that this will lead to more fatalities. I mean, you look at the record of the way that fatalities increased after we went from 55 back up to 65.
I don't know. There are people who might dispute it because I think one of the things, and this is just from personal anecdote, somebody did also bring this point out on the House floor, that you see a lot of accidents, not so much because of higher speeds alone, but because people are traveling at different speeds. And I know that I can say they raised the speed limit for trucks in Illinois a few years ago from 55. Trucks used to have to go slower than cars. Now they're up to 65. And how many times might you be speeding down the highway and you kind of come up little faster than you thought you were on the back of a semi? And I think that that's where people can get into accidents. I know just a couple of weeks ago I was driving along and somebody must have been going 46 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour. Is one of the slowest vehicles I've ever seen on an interstate highway, and I almost rear-ended them because it came up so fast. And so one of the ideas here is that perhaps if you eliminate that differentiation a little bit more, people are traveling more at the same speed, that you might have fewer accidents that way.
So you think,
you
think
this law does not raise the minimum that I'm
so aware you,
of,
you think so. The guy who's going 50 is now going to go 55 or 60?
No, exactly. No, that's a fair point, Charlie.
And I would say a lot less argument over another bill that was signed, and that is the one that will ban the handheld cell phone while behind the wheel, forcing you to use some type of hands-free device and all of that. Real quick, maybe Brian, you can just maybe in 10 seconds here, will this also impact the speed limit change, the semi-trucks, will they be able to go that fast?
I think so. Basically, it just says the speed limit on highways is 70 miles an hour.
Okay.
Or interstate highways.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. Charlie, I'll start with you.
Well, this past week, the Republican county chairman in the 75th district, which is just south of Chicago, kind of takes in some of the southern suburbs and part of LaSalle County. Anyway, they named a replacement for State Representative who was retiring, and this person will become the first black Republican in the state legislature since 1983. His name is John Anthony, and he is a Kendall County Sheriff's Deputy, and he'll replace Representative Pam Roth of Morris. And interestingly enough, when I began as a reporter covering state government, there were black Republicans in the House because under the old Constitution and the first 10 years of the new Constitution, voters elected three members in each House district, and there was a complicated system called cumulative voting, and that impact was in virtually every district in the state, there was at least one representative from each of the two main parties. That went away with the cutback amendment in 1980, championed by Governor Quinn.
Brian Mackey.
So a less diverse legislature we can thank Governor Quinn for, I guess. Sorry, that was a digression. Friday morning, a number of reporters were taken around the west wing of the State House. The press room has been in temporary quarters in a building next door. They were remodeling the west wing, and in fact, they eliminated the floor where the press room used to be. They just took it out. It had been added sometime after the 1800s because the goal of this $50 million renovation was to return the Capitol to its period of historic significance. The touches are kind of amazing. They have these exit signs that look like they're from the 1800s, and even the doorknobs have a state seal embossed into them. I personally am a little more okay than some reporters are with government buildings and public buildings kind of being nice and well-appointed, but I think that readers of newspapers should brace themselves. You're probably going to be seeing a spate of stories about the opulence and the spending on this renovation at a time when the state is struggling with pensions and other funding issues.
I have a quick question for you, Brian. Since they're going back to what it was like in the late 1800s, will there be spittoons in all the offices?
We were forced to smoke on the tour, cigars, too. It was remarkable.
No, they did wash away a lot of the marble, he said, and there are some stains that the architect said he wasn't sure if they were just part of the rock or if they just were unable to wash away some of the smoke. He said it was really amazing to see the accumulation of what all the smoke had done to the granite and such.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Amanda Vinicky, note from the field.
As of this taping, there are only 68 bills left that Governor Pat Quinn has left to act on. So look for that to be coming soon. Bill signings winding down. I do expect that we will nonetheless continue to see a lot of Pat Quinn press appearances. A couple of the interesting ones that he has signed, Illinois now has a quote-unquote puppy lemon law, and you also will be able to show a digital proof of insurance instead of having to show an actual insurance card when you get pulled over in your car, perhaps for going over the speed limit.
And that will do it for State Week in Review this week. Thanks to our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey. Remember, a podcast of this show is available by searching iTunes for State Week in Review and production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.